I'm Jim Cameron, Jim Cameron Consulting, broadcasting from the Fountainhead, home of Synergy Billing, and I'm your host for Volusia Matters, news, interviews, and matters that impact Volusia County directly or indirectly. And now for the news. It seems Bike Week's estimated 400,000 or so bikers had a good time in town this past week. And I heard the hotels did exceptionally well with occupancy rates, which hopefully meant plenty of patrons for our bars, retail stores, restaurants, cafes, and such. So happy for that. Next item, Florida legislature ended its session last Friday. And for a recap of some of the major bills, House and Senate approved a $117 billion budget. That's a 1.4% reduction compared to our current budget from last year. And it also includes $717 million for healthcare initiatives aiming to attract more doctors to the state, and it allocates $500 million to pay down state debt. Education funding included a $1.8 billion increase in public school funding compared to last year, and that means $240 per student spending increase, and also a $1.2 billion increase for teacher salaries. The budget now goes to Governor DeSantis, and he has between 7 to 15 days to either approve it or veto it once it reaches his desk. And let me repeat, once it reaches his desk. Now that may be tomorrow, next week, whatever sometime, but the governor also has line item veto for individual House or Senate members' specific projects back in their district. And our Volusia delegation has several much-needed projects in that budget, so let's hope they fare well. Another bill, House Bill 7089, healthcare, increases patient access to healthcare cost coverage information from hospitals and insurers for non-emergency service and procedures. It requires hospitals to provide a good faith estimate of services to patients and their insurance companies for scheduled services and procedures. It also requires insurance companies to provide customers an advanced explanation of benefits after the patient receives an estimate from the facility. Next item, another bill, Senate Bill 1638, called Compact to Conserve, by Volusia's Senator Travis Hudson, commits revenues from the gaming compact between the state and the Seminole Tribe for continued acquisition and management of Florida's conservation lands and clean water infrastructure. There were several property insurance bills. House Bill 7073 eliminates certain taxes, fees that homeowners pay on their property and flood insurance, thus reducing property insurance premiums by more than $500 million statewide. Senate Bill 7028 grants $200 million in funding for the My Safe Home program, which provides matching grants up to $10,000 for families who fortify their homes with new hurricane-safe doors and windows, or those who replace their roof. And these improvements, in turn, should help reduce insurance premiums. Another item that might impact us here locally is House Bill 1029. It's a new pilot program it's a property insurance initiative designed to expand My Safe Florida Home program. and it would allow condo associations, like residential homeowners, to pursue matching grant dollars for storm hardening renovations. Because in the past, they had not been able to take advantage of the My Safe Home Florida program. So let's see what happens. Another bill, Live Local Act from last year. This is part two, and it's Senate Bill 328, and it streamlines and clarifies affordable housing development by providing more flexibility regarding zoning, density, and parking requirements for affordable housing projects. It authorizes multifamily and mixed-use residential developments in areas zoned for commercial, industrial, or mixed use if at least 40% of the units are affordable. And it prohibits counties and cities from requiring zoning changes or land use amendments for such developments, from restricting the density and floor area ratio and the height of these developments below certain thresholds. It also revises the Florida Housing Finance Corporation's authority to preclude applications from programs under certain conditions. And it also appropriates $100 million to the State Housing Trust Fund for the Florida Hometown Hero Program. Another bill, House Bill 1365, unauthorized public camping, public sleeping, defines terms and prohibits counties and cities from allowing public camping or sleeping on public property. But it authorizes counties to designate public property for public camping for up to 1 year, and it requires counties to submit documentation proving that there are not enough open beds in homeless shelters, and designated property must meet specific conditions regarding location, safety, and impact. It mandates counties to establish minimum standards for safety, sanitation, behavioral services access, and it prohibits illegal substances and alcohol on such properties. Okay, this just in. Today, Tuesday, Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the Consumer Price Index increased 3.2% in February, and that's after economists had predicted only a 3.1% increase. And that's on top of the 3.1% rate back in January. Now, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell mentioned that the central bank is not far from cutting rates, but wants more confidence that inflation is moving towards its 2% target. But this 3 and 4% inflation over the last couple of months, despite higher interest rates, says that the last mile going to that 2% goal is going to be challenging. So are they going to reduce rates in the coming months? Stay tuned. Also, President Biden has proposed a budget for fiscal year 2024-25 at $7.3 trillion. It's a 4.6% increase over the current year's budget and includes allocations for both defense and non-defense discretionary spending. And it seeks to reduce projected deficits by $3 trillion through 2033, with $400 billion in reductions by 2025 to help combat inflation. It also proposes $2.8 trillion of new spending and tax breaks, alongside $5.5 trillion of revenue and savings. Now, some budget highlights include a 25% minimum tax on those individuals with wealth over $100 million. Well, I guess that leaves me out. I ain't got to worry about that. Also, it includes investments to extend Medicare solvency by at least 25 years. And next item, moving back here to the county, last week, County Council approved a new agreement with Oak Hill to operate a recently completed sanitary sewer system in Indian Harbor Estates, and it'll reduce pollutants flowing into the Mosquito Lagoon by providing some 280 or so homeowners with centralized wastewater service, thus providing a cleaner waterway for marine life. And with the construction complete, property owners are now connecting to the new sewer system. And Volusia County is the water provider for Oak Hill and will oversee the wastewater system's operation and maintenance. And I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate Mayor Doug Gibson and their city commission down there, because I know they worked hard on this. Next item, Volusia Elected Officials Roundtable met yesterday. Now, this is the group that includes all the local mayors, city managers, members of county council, as well as staff. And yesterday's meeting was chaired by Ponce Inlet Mayor Lois Peritsky, and county's government relations director, John Booker, provided a recap of certain bills that related to the this past legislative session. And Transit Division Director Bobby King outlined a new, what's called VoRide program. I want to mention the next meeting. It will be Monday, May the 13th, and they begin at 9 a.m., location to be decided. I highly recommend anybody interested in local government to attend this meeting. And later that same week, I wanted to mention the next Volusia Economic Development Q Breakfast will be May 17th, 7:30 a.m., Daytona National Airport. Next, Ormond Beach Economic Development staff, Brian Rademacher, has been meeting with the owners of Ormond Crossings regarding progress and preparation for internal infrastructure developments. And then Ormond Beach is also starting a six-week Citizens Academy program beginning April the 18th. It'll include about 20 or so applicants, where they'll learn different facets of city government operations, like public works and planning and economic development, police and fire. Then they're going to have a graduation ceremony or so at the June 4th City Commission meeting. And anybody interested should register by April the 1st by going to www.ormondbeach.org/citizensacademy. And moving on, with spring break just around the corner, for the second year in a row, New Smyrna Beach Police Department is going to implement a pretty much large law enforcement presence with a 11 p.m. local youth curfew to prevent juvenile crime. Now, this comes after their 2022 spring break, where they had a bunch of arrests, like 70 juvenile arrests. They're going to implement this, and local business owners said that this curfew in the past has been effective. So wish them the best down there. Moving on, Mayor Karen Chessis presented DeBerry's State of the City this morning, and their theme was DeBerry at 30, where they discussed the city's past, present, and future. And DeBerry is also taking applications for their own 8-week Citizens Academy program, which will start April the 2nd. Next item, last week, Congress approved a $460 billion government spending package which keeps agriculture, transportation, housing, energy, Veterans Affairs, and other departments funded through the remainder of this fiscal year, this budget year, that being September the 30th. Now, with this legislation being approved before last Friday's March 8 deadline, it avoids a partial government shutdown. Now, the House vote was 339-85, and our local Congressman Michael Waltz and Corey Mills both voted no. The Senate vote was 75-22, with our Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott both voting no. And all pretty much had indicated that they don't like these stopgap temporary spending measures as opposed to addressing long-term budget solutions. And they indicated also that the bill had too many unrelated spending earmarks. And I think they've got that $34 trillion debt figure in mind as well. Overall, the legislation aims to keep money flowing to federal agencies, preventing a shutdown. Now, negotiations are already underway for a second package of six bills to ensure that defense, housing and urban development, Food and Drug Administration, financial services, interior, environment, and defense military construction are fully funded by a March 22nd deadline. Now, these bills ensure the continued operation of essential government functions and services, and the total discretionary spending set by Congress for the entire fiscal year is approximately $1.66 trillion. As of January 2024, as you've heard me say, U.S. government total debt was $34 trillion. I know, but who owns this debt? Japan owns $1.1 trillion worth, and that's 14.5% of the foreign owned of U.S. debt. They're the largest foreign holder of our debt. And China owns $770 billion and ranks second amongst the foreign holders. And given China's rapid economic expansion, this substantial investment in U.S. debt isn't surprising. Now, United Kingdom owns $693 billion. Little Luxembourg owns $318 billion. And even Little Cayman Islands owns $265 billion. To put this debt into proportion, that $34 trillion exceeds the combined gross domestic product of the top five global economies after the United States, that being China, Japan, Germany, India, and the UK. Next item, jumping back here to Florida. Now that the legislative session is complete as of last Friday, let's look at some of the elections coming up in November. Now, the state Senate, as you know, has 40 seats. 12 are Democrats, 28 are Republicans. Now, there are 11 incumbents who are term limited or are not going to seek re-election. And that includes Volusia Delegation's District 7 Senator Travis Hudson. Now, of those 11 incumbents, 5 are Democrats, 6 are Republican. Now, moving on to the House. The House is made up of 120 members, of which 84 are Republican, 36 are Democrat. Now, 17 incumbents are term limited and won't seek re-election. And that includes our Volusia delegation's Tom Leek, who is running for State Senate District 7, currently held by Senator Travis Hudson, and also Volusia delegation's Representative Stan McLean, who is running for Senate District 9, currently held by Keith Perry. And of those 17 incumbents, two are Democrats and 15 are Republicans. Now moving on to our next item is the interview with Volusia County Council member David Santiago. Okay, so today we have as our guest County Council member, District 5, Dave Santiago. Glad to have you with us today, Dave.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be with you.
All right. Last Tuesday's County Council meeting, Council tentatively agreed to, I believe, changes in several advisory boards. Can you share with us a little bit more what took place as it relates to advisory boards?
Yeah, the overall exercise was one that the council agreed that we needed to review all boards periodically, which I think, as I said at the county council meeting, I think that's healthy. I know certain community members, you know, were a little scared about their particular project or thing that they're working on could be eliminated, but that wasn't the case. The idea was to review them. Certainly all were up for discussion, but at the end of the day, we really just cleaned up some that are not really effective because either they're having problems with getting volunteers or there's other ways to be more efficient or it may be obsolete. So I think the three that we discussed there fall in those categories. The other ones we talked about enhancing and we made a change. Like NRAC, we redirected NRAC to focus on probably one of our most pressing needs is how do we deal with development and stormwater issues, right? And yep. You know, we've been applying our code as it's been written for several years, but maybe it's a time to look at it. That's why I suggested, council agreed, to have those folks there where there's a lot of industry experts there on both sides, if you want to call it, that can probably opine and give us some good suggestions to deal with flooding into the future as it pertains to development. So I think the exercise went well, and I think generally it was well received.
I think you did a good job there as well. So, but another item as it relates to beaches. Now, it cost the county basically $26.4 million to operate the beach.
Yep.
And you received from beach passes, the annual passes, and then tolls, $7.8 million. Now, at that meeting, the council addressed different ideas about technology and automation for getting cars on the beach. And they also discussed the idea of paid off-beach parking. Can you share any more details with us about that?
Yeah, this was a priority of one of my colleagues, Troy Kent. He talked about this, you know, a few months into becoming a new council member, and it was important to him. And, you know, we didn't quite get the results that he was looking for, but he brought it back. He mentioned it a couple times during council meetings, and we agreed to rehear it. I think we had a little bit more time to digest it and get some more facts from staff. So I have to compliment him first because he stuck with it. He campaigned on it or talked about it in his community, and here we are. So the plan allows us to modernize it, right? Not only with technology, but also finding a way for Volusia residents, which was a priority for Troy Kent, to not pay to go on the beach. The numbers now will reflect that we can do this fiscally. We will still charge non-residents of Volusia County a fee to enter and drive or park on the beach. We will also then now be utilizing what we've been giving away for free in our off-site parking, off-beach. Many municipalities and counties have long been charging for off-site parking because it's an expense to acquire the land and to maintain the property. So now when this finalizes and passes, Volusia residents will not have to pay as long as they register. That's going to be the key, Jim. People have to go in and register. because the license plate readers, we're going to be utilizing modern technology. License plate readers will know if that vehicle is pre-registered to have free parking there as a resident. And then non-residents would pay, I think the fee that's being proposed right now for off-site parking is $20. So we believe that if the numbers and the projections based on our consultant expertise, and they've done this in many areas, they study the trends here for Volusia, and we think it's going to make a significant impact in the at the end of the day in our budget. So, and then at the same time, Volusia residents will get to utilize it at no charge because it's their beaches.
And let me go back on that. Just you mentioned like license plate readers and all. So we're still looking at the use of toll booths.
Yeah, so it's a couple of the spots, they're going to be hybrid, right? So some of the busier locations where we get a lot of traffic getting into the beach will have a combination of a license plate reader where someone can go into a separate lane and the license plate reader would identify if it's a registered vehicle to have free parking or they pay for an annual pass and they can proceed. Some of those busy locations, like I said, will have two of those. So it'll also have a manned person that someone can pay individually to enter the beach also. Now the offsite parking locations will all be toll by plate. So the persons will by plate, or they register there, utilizing a smart app, or they can call into the call center or go to a website and pay for the day and register their tag. So it's going to be pretty neat. And hopefully it allows for the beaches to be more efficient when we have those busy days where there's long lines. So I'm hopeful that this will minimize that impact.
Now, speaking of, like I say, possible, to minimize long lines, are y'all going to open up a few more approaches?
No, at this point, that's not up for discussion. However, because the current trends that we operate the beach, there are times where certain ramps are not open under today's scenario.
Yep.
If we put those automated, which I believe we're going to, those automated license plate readers with a gate, then people will be able to use those all the time when the beach is open. So that would be an efficiency and an accessibility convenience for the residents. So they'll be able to use it, just won't be somebody there.
Okay. Again, at that meeting, the council, they updated an ordinance amending the county's comprehensive plan as it relates to affordable housing. And I believe that's the report, Path Forward. So, can you explain a little bit more about that comp plan amendment as it relates to affordable housing?
Yeah, that was more of a technical procedural vote that we had to do last Tuesday. We had already changed the comp plan to reflect certain policies that make it more development or bringing in affordable housing more affordable with different building standards. So what Clay had before us was the kind of sort of the last step in adopting all that. So within those rules, we made some changes into, giving concessions in certain areas, like for landscape buffers or for densities bonuses, depending on, the type of project it is. So it's also a work product that our staff and our affordable housing committee has been working on for almost 3 years. So I think it's well thought out. Certainly, some of my colleagues had some concerns with it. I think many of them were legitimate, as far as that I agreed with them. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of work went into it, and that's why I was very supportive of it. And we all know that the cost of housing continues to go up and up. And I made the case that oftentimes part of those drivers in that cost increase is government bureaucracy. And the requirements that we place with people that want to build. So if we can give some relief to some of those requirements that are reasonable, then we can give them some other offsets that help their project be more less costly to build, which the idea behind that is they transition that cost savings over to whoever's either purchasing or renting the home. So I support it, and I think it was a good move.
Okay. Hey, one last question, if I could add.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're a former legislator, and I really appreciate the job you did up there in Tallahassee for us, though. Anything that you or the county that you're looking at as far as this past legislative session that ended last week?
You know, I think for me individually, you know, there were several things that my colleagues, you know, brought up when we talked about keeping an eye on legislation. But I think the one that had the potential biggest impact was the cost of living increase for retirement individuals on the FRS system. That would have cost us, I think, in excess of $10 million a year that we didn't have budgeted. So it would have been in the billions cost to the entire state, and not only the state agencies, but also local governments. And you know, there was a push in the House of Representatives where it passed. They were really motivated on that bill. And I have to say that thank goodness that the Senate stood strong there and did not accept that language. That would have impacted how we spend our money in this next upcoming budget cycle. So that was a big one. There's certainly always, you know, little preemptions that happen in there here and there, but it's just that's the way of the land right now. And oftentimes the legislature is responding to things that some city or county has done that was ridiculous. And they're responding to try to standardize the state. So not making an argument for it, but that's usually the reasons why you see a lot of those preemptions.
Yeah, I'm familiar with some of those, and all you're right there, though. But any closing comments that you can share with us, David?
No, I'll just say, you know, keep an eye on. I think the council is doing some good things. We're pioneering new trails and not accepting the standard as the norm. Continuing going forward, I think we're trying to be innovative and at the same time being friendly to our constituents and sit in not wasting money also. So I'm excited about the work we're doing on the county council, and I think more good things are to come for our county. Thank you.
I agree. You're doing a fantastic job. Well,
Thank
David,
you.
thank you again ever so much.
All right, you have a good one. Bye-bye.
And to finish up, look for a new podcast episode to be released next week. And the views expressed on this podcast may or may not necessarily express the opinions of Jim Cameron Consulting. And for more news, check out my newsletter, which is being emailed first week of the month. And if you're not receiving it, call me at 566-2140, and my $1,000 guarantee still stands. And I want to take this opportunity, well, to thank our military. I mean, those service individuals that serve in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. And it's as crazy as the world has gotten to be these days. It's good to know that we're protected by these amazing individuals. Now, this is Jim Cameron signing off, saying God bless Israel, Ukraine, United States, and Sweden for joining NATO. And by the way, I want to see that bastard Putin, his head on a stick. And Roll Tide.